Well, for as long as I can remember, I have always loved mathematics. Now, maybe not everyone is in the same boat as me, but having many children as well after that, or two children, not many, but having children, one of the most rewarding and trying times, in my opinion at least, is the times we have and the opportunities we have at teaching our children. Although Amber and I haven't really fully settled on whether we're going to do public or private or homeschooling, I've always looked forward to being able to share my love of math and science and other aspects of what I've learned over the years with my children. I've always looked forward to coming up with ideas and how lesson plans may be of how we would go about teaching them. When I think about this, when I think about Ezra, and I, Ezra's our older son, as you know, he's just over 3 years old, and Ezra's doing great. He's doing good with numbers. He loves numbers. He loves counting. He loves addition, although he doesn't fully understand what addition is. We've been able to make some connections, which I'm super proud about. He understands those numbers, though. He loves writing them on my whiteboard, and he loves working together with me as we're going through letters and numbers, just little elements, and I love sharing those moments with him. But as we're building these fundamental pillars of mathematics, starting with numbers, one of the pillars of mathematics is counting. Counting. You see, learning to count is pretty crucial in many aspects in life. Ezra loves counting, as I mentioned. Ezekiel, on the other hand, he hasn't shown much interest yet. Of course, he's just over a year old. That'll probably come later. Interestingly enough, though, counting has a unique application within God's word. Been thinking about the God's holy days recently. I'm sure many of us have. We just came out of another holy day season. We just finished up the days of unleavened bread. But there's one holy day that has a unique aspect among the rest in its timing, a unique aspect in timing. When we think about the festivals of God, and we think about the different respected holy days within them, think about the holy convocations. First day and last day of unleavened bread happen on the 15th and the 21st of the first month, respectively. Trumpets and atonement are on the first and 10th day of the seventh month. Tabernacles and the 8th day, the last great day, happen on the 15th and the 22nd day of the seventh month. But when you think about Pentecost, what day does it land on? Well, like we know, Pentecost has a unique aspect. Pentecost, also known as the Feast of Weeks, we see Pentecost having this unique aspect in God's plan, a unique aspect that it doesn't land on a designated day of the calendar each year, but instead we arrive at it through counting. And so we are doing that today. Today is the seventh day of the count to Pentecost. Turn with me, if you would, over to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23, beginning in verse 15. And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of wave offering. 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. Let's skip down to verse 21. And you shall proclaim on that same day that it is a holy convocation to you. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. We see here, pictured in Leviticus 23, at a command, an instruction to count to this holy day. And so for today, I'd like to take a moment in this split sermon time to review the three main perspectives and arriving to the date of Pentecost. Now, there are multiple perspectives out there on how you arrive at Pentecost, how you count, but I'm going to focus more on the main three that exist in the world around us, the main three. Now, and then we're going to spend a little bit more time at the end focusing on our current teaching and current understanding in the United Church of God. So let's start today by the first perspective. The first perspective on counting to Pentecost is counting to Pentecost landing on a fixed date of Sivan 6. Now, this is where it lands on the sixth day of that same month every year. And this comes from the majority, comes from the Jewish population today. Now, they've been doing this for a while as well. But, you know, they, in the Jewish community, they keep Pentecost on a fixed day every year. Now, there's a little bit of disagreement amongst the group. Of course, you're going to have disagreement amongst any group of people. But there's a disagreement throughout history of whether or not the Jews, the Hebrews, the Israelites kept Pentecost on a fixed date, even in this little community. Of course, we would disagree that it's been done that way for a while. But in the, even in the Jewish community, there's disagreement. In fact, if you look at many scholars, biblical scholars and extra-biblical reference books, you'll find that even in the first century AD, there were many disagreements, even amongst the Jewish community, on what day Passover is to be kept, on what day Pentecost was to be kept. There were many disagreements of those things. And so, but we do see that a fixed date keeping of Pentecost comes from a majority of the Jewish population today. In quick overview, how it's done is day one of the count happens the day after the Sabbath in the days of unleavened bread, and they interpret the Sabbath to mean the first day of unleavened bread as a high Sabbath, not the weekly Sabbath, but the high Sabbath. And so day one would be Nisan 16, right? So the first day of unleavened bread is the 15th of the first month. So day one to the count of the Pentecost for them would be day the day after, Nisan 16. That would then land you day 50 in Sivan 6. That's kind of an overview, quick overview of how it's done. The primary reasons this is done today, because it's done in the Jewish community, but also in some other communities outside the Jewish lineage, Jewish people today, it's done outside as well. If you look at Leviticus chapter 23, we're going to spend a majority of our time here in Leviticus chapter 23. But in verse 15, the verse we just read, it says, "You shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath." The main reasoning for what they interpret here for landing on the fixed date is they interpret the word Sabbath to mean high Sabbath or an annual Sabbath, an annual Sabbath. They don't consider this Sabbath to be the weekly Sabbath. And so because of this, they start on the first day of unleavened bread. They start to count the next day, as the scripture says. Some believe, some outside the Jewish community, still take this route because they believe the Jews have authority in this matter. We don't have to turn there, but in Matthew chapter 23, there's a quote that's often attributed to this mindset, where Jesus Christ says that the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. And so a lot of people partner those two notions together and say, well, if the Jews sit in that seat, we should listen to their reckoning of how to count to Pentecost. So some people outside the Jewish community do keep a fixed date of Pentecost as well. For many that observe God's holy days still today, that do keep God's holy days, many believe keeping the Pentecost on a fixed date of Sivan 6 is the correct perspective. Many believe that, following the interpretations and reckoning of the common Jewish system. All right, let's look at another perspective. I said we were going to cover the three main ones. The second one is a Monday Passover, or Pentecost, excuse me. I got Passover on the brain, of course. The second main perspective is a Monday Pentecost. This is where day 50 lands on a Monday. The counting of the Pentecost starts on the day after the Sunday during the days of unleavened bread. Day one would be the Monday after what we see here in verse 15 as the wave sheaf offering. So they would start day one on a Monday and naturally land on day 50 on a Monday as well. Some couple of terms you can keep in mind, or if you want to take notes on them. This sermon's primarily a doctrinal review sermon, you know, going through things that we've probably learned and read about over the years. But the term for how this count is actually determined is called exclusive counting or exclusive reckoning, because you start on the Sunday during the day of the unleavened bread, but you exclude that Sunday from the count and you actually start day one as the next day. You exclude the starting day. And so that's why it's called the excluding or exclusive reckoning. For them, counting Pentecost would then have a weekly cycle of Monday through Sunday, and you would count seven cycles of that, landing back on a Monday for Pentecost. The primary reasons for this, as we discussed a little bit ago, a little briefly, that the if we look in Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 15, the primary reasons we see there is the English translation of from the day. One of the reasons is we look at the English translation of from the day, the people that keep this perspective, and they say, this is the natural understanding in the English. For example, if I were to ask you, meet me 7 days from today, what day would be day one? Well, naturally, day one would be tomorrow. That's the natural counting way in English. When I say, meet me 3 days from today, 7 days from today, that phrase, from today, you generally count with day one being tomorrow. I don't know anybody that counts the day that you're already spent, the day that's partially gone. But here, we see that they look there and they see that English phrase, from the day, and they assume the day one then would be tomorrow. And so they naturally exclude the day that you start the count on. Others that keep this form of counting like to do it because that's the way the majority time that we've done it in the Church of God history, at least in the modern era. You know, up until about the 70s, right? 70, was it 73 or 74? We changed in the modern church era of the Church of God and we had understanding of when to move to a Sunday Pentecost. And so some look at this and say, well, that was the majority teaching of the modern church era. And so we're going to keep in line with that teaching. Some people, I've actually heard that from several people, that there's no need to change that perspective because that was the majority timeline teaching, the majority teaching for the timeline. You know, for some, keeping Pentecost on a Monday is not a break from tradition. They like sitting where we've always done it up until the 70s, right? Like I mentioned. But another perspective that we see for many is counting Pentecost starting on a Monday and ending on a Monday. That's another main perspective. Okay, let's turn our attention to the third main perspective. This is the perspective that the United Church of God holds and the greater community of the Church of God today. This main perspective is where Pentecost is observed on a Sunday. Now, if you've been keeping Pentecost for many years, this is no surprise. We keep Pentecost and observe it on a Sunday. And it's the same every year on a Sunday because we count starting on a Sunday. Here, this is when day 50 lands on that first day of the week, because the counting begins on the first day of the week. Counting begins on the Sunday during the Days of Unleavened Bread. So in the year that we're in right now, Sunday, this last Sunday would be day one on our count to Pentecost, making today day seven. Day seven on our road to Pentecost. The primary reasons from this, we'll just do an overview because we're going to dive in a little bit deeper. We're going to dive in a little bit deeper and go through why this is our current teaching, why we believe this is the right understanding, the correct interpretation of the Bible, the true understanding that God revealed many decades ago. We'll look here in Leviticus 23 and verse 15, that same phrase, from the day. When you actually look into the Hebrew a little bit more of from the day, you know, we don't necessarily disagree that from the day means counting tomorrow as day one. But we believe the Hebrew is a little bit obscured by this form of the English phrase. If you look at the Hebrew form, the Hebrew word that's translated from, the better translation would be beginning with or starting on. In fact, if you look at several commentators, many language experts agree with this. Many language experts agree that the word is better translated as starting on. We'll go into a little bit depth there a little later. This is just an overview of the primary reasons. Secondly, the primary reason we believe this starts on a Sunday is because the phrase after the Sabbath. Now, after the Sabbath, the main interpretation, not only in the Church of God, but also in the a lot of the commentaries out there, a lot of the scholars that do work, they believe the Sabbath is the weekly Sabbath, just like we do. We believe the interpretation here is for the weekly Sabbath, and it's not a high Sabbath or an annual Sabbath, at least not necessarily. They can sometimes fall on the same day, depending on the year. But for many in the Church of God body today, observing Pentecost on a Sunday, 50 days after the Sunday during the Days of Unleavened Bread, is how the count is done. Okay, let's transition here a little bit. For the rest of the sermon, let's dive in a little bit deeper of why this is the correct interpretation. You know, going through some of those main perspectives that I just briefly mentioned. So we'll start with three main areas of focus. Three main areas of focus to understand why this is the correct way of counting. I will say this is a little bit big of a big form of a trying to get my words there. It's a big topic, and I'm just going to cover three main perspectives on why this count is the appropriate counting to Pentecost. Let's start with what I mentioned, the meaning of the Sabbath. The day, the meaning of the Hebrew word for Sabbath in Leviticus 23. All right, let's take a look. Hebrew for Sabbath is Shabbat. You know, even if you don't speak Hebrew like myself, I don't speak Hebrew. Shabbat is a very common Hebrew word. It's one that most of us maybe know, even if we don't speak Hebrew. Here we see in Leviticus chapter 23 that the word Shabbat is mentioned nine times. Nine times in the context of Leviticus chapter 23. Nine times it's mentioned in the context of the festivals of God. The festivals of God. The context really is about God's Sabbaths or rest days. But the question comes down to, is the Sabbath that's mentioned in verse 15, is it an annual Sabbath or a weekly Sabbath? Well, let's break it down a little bit. In Leviticus chapter 23, in verses, let's look at the first two occurrences of the word Shabbat. Let's start in verse 3. It says, 6 days you shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is a Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Here we see the first two references to Shabbat in Leviticus 23. We see the seventh day is a Sabbath, and then later on it says, is a Sabbath of the Lord. Clearly here we have a reference to a weekly Sabbath. This one isn't really up for debate much. I haven't found any books or references that say the opposite, that this is a weekly Sabbath. It's a clear indication. Let's look at the third occurrence. Jump down to verse 11. Verse 11, it says, he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. So here we see another Sabbath. Here we see another reference to a Shabbat. Now, there's no mention of the previous festivals up until this point as a Sabbath. There's no precedent in this context for Sabbath to mean anything other than weekly Sabbath. We know they are Sabbaths. We know that the holy days are Sabbaths. They are rest days. But it just doesn't really talk about that until verse 11. And so by looking at the context, we know that this one here could be pointing to a weekly Sabbath. Now, it's a little bit up for debate because it doesn't specifically say it. But the context there, as we're going, it doesn't change to a holy day quite yet. All right, let's take a look at the fourth, fifth, and sixth occurrence. We're going to actually come back to these ones in verses 15 and 16 because they're the Sabbaths that we're discussing. Let's come back to those. Let's look at the seventh and eighth reference of Shabbat in Leviticus 23. The seventh and eighth occurrence happen in verse 32. 32, we see, it shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls on the ninth day of the month at evening, and from evening to evening you shall celebrate the Sabbath. Now here we see a little bit of a change. The Sabbath then is pointing to a reference to atonement, an annual holy day. So here we see a little bit of a change, and so we have a little bit of a discussion. Now let's look at the last occurrence in verse 38. The last occurrence in 38, we see, besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, besides your gifts, besides your vows, and besides all your freewill offerings, which you give to the Lord. Talking about sacrifices and drink offerings. But it says, besides all the Sabbaths. So here we see possibly another weekly Sabbath reference, but also a combination maybe, all the Sabbaths of the Lord. But it is interesting, except for atonement, as we noticed in verse 32, except for atonement in verse 32, the rest are really either a combination or references to the weekly Sabbath, except for, of course, the discussion at hand in verse 15 and 16. We skipped over those, right? We said we'd come back to those. In verses 15 and 16, we get the term Shabbat for counting after the Sabbath. So being consistent with at least verse 3 and up, you know, we don't have a holy day change yet in the context. Now, the argument may be a little weak for saying that, but the context, at least leading up to it, it doesn't change. It doesn't shift to a holy day. It stays with the weekly Sabbath context. And so it's interesting to be consistent, at least with the Hebrew, would be conclude that the verse here then is a weekly Sabbath. But let's look a little bit further in the Hebrew. Let's look a little bit deeper. The Hebrew actually is the same Hebrew structure in all the terms. In verse 11, it says the day after the Sabbath. Verse 15, it says the day after the Sabbath. Verse 16 has the addition of the word seven involved there. We see seventh Sabbath, but they all have the same Hebrew structure. It all has the same Hebrew structure, and it all has the same Hebrew usage. So to be inconsistent, it would mean that it would point to a weekly Sabbath. Let's parallel this actually with Deuteronomy chapter 16 as we look into this a little deeper. We look at Deuteronomy chapter 16. You can hold your place. We'll come back to Leviticus 23. But in Deuteronomy chapter 16, when it's reviewing some of these holy day observations, in Deuteronomy chapter 16 in verse 9, it says, "You shall count 7 weeks for yourself." Here we see the New King James translation as translating it as weeks. Not necessarily Sabbaths, but weeks. We actually see the parallel there, 7 weeks, the Hebrew Sabuah, which can be translated as 7 weeks or even potentially seven Sabbaths, depending on your context of the point. And so we do see that this is actually paralleled with it, that we have seven cycles of counting, seven weekly countings, starting as we've interpreted it now and looking through the Hebrew, it seems to point to a weekly Sabbath, that this would be full weekly counting, Sunday through Sabbath, the set up weekly schedule of God. It's interesting too, I mentioned it briefly, but a side point to this, that the feast of the first day of unleavened bread and the last day of unleavened bread aren't actually called a Shabbat. They're not called a Sabbath here in this context. Now, of course, we know they are a Sabbath. In fact, they're referenced as a Sabbath in the New Testament, but the first day of unleavened bread is not mentioned as a Sabbath in the Old Testament, at least. It's just not a traditional way to refer to it. It is referenced that in the New Testament. But if the Jews then say the first day of unleavened bread is the Sabbath that's mentioned here, that seems to be inconsistent with the way that the rest of the Old Testament scriptures use that phrasing, which is kind of an interesting side point. But understanding the meaning of the word Sabbath, it's a good starting point. But maybe it's not the strongest argument. But it does start to build a little bit of our understanding. Understanding that the word Sabbath means the weekly Sabbath is a good starting point on how we begin our counting. Let's look at the second main perspective. The second main aspect of how this is the correct understanding is the meaning of the word from. The meaning of the word from. Now, to me, I always find it interesting looking at the meaning of words and going into the depth of how different words are used in the Bible. Maybe one didn't think he could spend so much time discussing what from actually means. But here we see in Leviticus 23, verse 15, from being used, from the day after the Sabbath. And there's a lot of discussion on how that is to be interpreted. Because like I mentioned, in English, the normal way of counting is you start tomorrow. If I say, meet me 7 days from today, you automatically start counting tomorrow as day one. But as we see in the Hebrew, the actual form, the Hebrew word for from is actually a very common preposition. It's a very common preposition. It's used 7,000 times, over 7,000 times throughout the Old Testament. So it definitely would take a long time going through each usage and seeing how it's used. But if you narrow it down a little bit, you narrow it down on how the word is used in conjunction with time, you get a little bit better of a view of how the word's used. The Hebrew word is min, M-I-N, or me, or min, however you would say that, depending on what type of accent and origin you come from. But as we understand it, and as a lot of scholars point out, min actually means starting on or beginning with, when it's in conjunction with time. That's how it's presented and usually used with time. For instance, some translations actually do render this. Some translations actually do start with that. An example of this is the Good News translation. It says, count 7 full weeks on which you bring. And it says... it says count 7 full weeks starting on which you bring, starting on the day in which you bring the wave sheaf offering is what it's saying. The CEB version of the Bible says starting with the day. So they do translate that phrasing when it's in conjunction with time as beginning on or starting with that day, that wave sheaf offering day. Again, that's the Sunday during the days on unleavened bread. As I mentioned, this Hebrew word, it's a preposition very commonly used, but when it's used in conjunction with time, the majority usage is with inclusive reckoning, where you start on the day you're referring to. In fact, in verse 16, we see a very similar example to this. Now, the Hebrew in verse 16 is a little bit different. It has a little bit different form of the word min. But in 16, it says, count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. What we see there is the word to the day. Now, to is a little bit different form of the word min. It's more of the end cap of a reference in time instead of a beginning. But what to point out is it is an inclusive reckoning. It talks about to the end, staying on that same day. It's inclusive. And so we see even in the example of verse 16, that same form of the Hebrew word, it's got a little bit differently since it is an ending, like I mentioned. It's about staying on that one day, including that day. Understanding the Sabbaths mentioned in this section that they are the weekly Sabbaths, and that the word min is better translated as starting on, we see a little bit of the argument building of how we count to Pentecost being the correct interpretation. Let's look at one last main focus. The main focus is actually on the end of the count. On the end of the count is where I want to draw our attention to. Look at verse 16 of Leviticus chapter 23. Count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. Here we see that you are to count 50 days until the end of a seventh Sabbath. Now, like I mentioned before, that Sabbath is the same Hebrew word. Now, of course, sometimes Shabbat can mean sevens, seventh sevens, so cycles of seven, if that's not already confusing enough. But here we see there's no real reason to just change the meaning of the day in the same context. Here we see that God is instructing the Israelites to keep counting 50 days ending on the day after a weekly Sabbath. You start on the first day of the week and you end then on a first day of the week. How you kind of start there. You know, if you, like I said, I like math. If you talk about remainders, if you remember long division, remainders, and if you take 50 days divided by seven, you get one day remaining. And that's why you end up on the same day you started counting, because there's 7 days in a week. Maybe a little nerdy aspect to the counting. But it's important to note that you would end on the same day that you count on, at least if you start with day one. Brethren, counting 50 days between days of unleavened bread and Pentecost actually is rich in meaning. You know, I plan, depending on the timing and how it all works out, I plan to go through this subject again in my next message. Instead of focusing on the doctrinal review aspect of how to count, I want to look through some lessons and some observations that we can actually see, some connections between why we count 50 days. Why is it counting instead of on a fixed date? So depending on how that all works out and the timing and the planning, you know, we're living in some times that you can't always rely on your own plans, but that may be my plan for the next message. But understanding the count to Pentecost, you know, it doesn't have to be too confusing. It doesn't have to be too complicated. But, you know, as men throughout history, we often tend to overcomplicate things. We tend to debate and cause a little bit of confusion over the years. I felt it was just a little bit of time. We're in the middle of the count now. We're day seven in to go through and remind us all how we count to Pentecost. Brethren, we keep the Pentecost on the first day of the week, counting 50 days, beginning with the day the wave sheaf offering would have been given, beginning with the Sunday during the day's unleavened bread. So like I mentioned, that was this last Sunday. And so today is day seven. And so until next time, let's remember this wonderful time of counting. And I'll see you on the next seventh.